This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Excuse me, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It is Wednesday. It's the first hour of our Wednesday program, and that means it's time for Middays with Mark, Congressman Mark Pocan, taking your calls for the hour. Our telephone number, 202-808-9925. And Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Always great having you with us. I should add, your website is pocan.house.gov, and people can tweet you at Rep. Mark Pocan. I noticed that the a number of Democrats are calling on Ajit Pai, to the former Verizon lawyer who now runs the FCC, who lied to Congress, according to press reports, about when they had an open comment period. Literally, millions of Americans went to the FCC's website to say, don't take down net neutrality. And they blocked or ignored all of those postings, or the majority of those postings, and then said, oh, nobody cares, so we're going to get rid of net neutrality. Do you know where this is going in Congress? Is there going to be a serious effort to hold this guy accountable for this crime?
I think most of the effort, at least on the House side right now, is to try to get the disagreeing with their decision resolution through. The Senate passed it, so it's already through the Senate. If we can pass it in the House, we could try to overturn that decision. So we have a discharge petition trying to do that, to have the resolution disapproval. Problem is, we need Republicans. We haven't had a lot of Republicans sign on yet, but I think, you know, that's part of the campaign we're doing, because while there could be hearings, again, it's hard to, when the Republicans are in control of the House and the Senate, to have those be effective. Certainly, if we can outright get a vote that has disapproval of that, we could perhaps overturn that decision. So I think that's where, in the House anyway, more of our focus has been on trying to get the signatures we need to force a vote.
You know, the Republicans in one of their first legislative actions, I believe, maybe it was an executive action, but I think it was legislation, was to allow coal mines to dump more waste and poison into our rivers, which end up as our drinking water. They have been absolutely dancing to the tune of the fossil fuel billionaires who claim that there's no such thing as global warming. You have one Republican who has signed on to the discharge petition asking Paul Ryan to allow a vote on this resolution of disapproval that would overturn what Ajit Pai did with the internet. It's so obvious, I think, to most Americans that the Republicans are insanely corrupt, and that the type of corruption that they're acting out is purely being bought and paid for by whoever writes the largest check, whichever industry, whether it's polluting coal or polluting oil or the the big internet service providers who want their monopolies and whatnot. I mean, I find it bizarre, for example, that one of them is advertising on TV, you can have this price for life. I mean, in a true competitive market, what happens over time is prices go down. Nobody would want a price for life, right? I mean, this is nuts. Do your Republican colleagues think of themselves as corrupt? Or is it just like, hey, go to Congress and get rich? Or is there some rationale or story that they tell themselves that makes this acceptable to them? I'm baffled by this.
Well, I think there's two ways of looking at it. One, there's the more normal levels of corruption, which is the undue influence by special interests via lobbyists, right? So something like the decision that happened around net neutrality. Clearly, it's in the best interest of only the big telecom companies and nobody else, no small business, no individual, no consumer. That's kind of the standard garden variety corruption. And then we've got the renewed level of corruption that's been brought in by the Trump administration, which is this, having your staff find your wife a job, getting you a used mattress from the Trump hotel, demanding expensive goods in their offices because they feel they're worth it, flying first class. There's that level. So one of the themes, I think, looking at November is what you just said, Tom, is just corruption, period. Whether it be the more garden variety, which people are tired of, which is why people are tired of corporations and the money they put into campaigns. And then part of it is the new level of corruption that when Donald Trump said he was going to drain the swamp, instead, he just dredged it bigger and built a high-rise luxury condo on it. And that's, you know, the problem I think that people are now seeing. When we pulled this issue, the Progressive Caucus in competitive congressional districts, when you talk about the swamp, and that includes big banks and big corporations, it gets even stronger, the opposition to what's happening. So people are with us on this, and I think it is one of the themes that we're going into November on.
That's great. And finally, before we pick up calls this morning, you had primaries in your state yesterday. What's your read on the outcome of the primaries? I mean, they were in, I believe, four states altogether. What's your take on what happened?
What a great day we had for progressives. So Vermont, the first transgender gubernatorial candidate, and Christine Hallquist. In Connecticut, the progressive won the primary for the congressional seat, Johanna Hayes, a teacher of the year. She'll be the first African-American female from Connecticut serving in Congress if she wins in November. In Minnesota, we had a bunch of good news. There's a number of congressional races, including, I think, one that listeners would be interested in, Ilhan Omar, who won the Keith Ellison seat, who is a strong progressive in the Minnesota legislature. And then in Wisconsin, Randy Brice, officially now, as we expected, won his primary, and now he is going to be the Democratic nominee running in the congressional seat that Paul Ryan vacated. A lot of activity. And then also our governor's race, you know, we have a real shot at beating Scott Walker. Tony Evers is our state superintendent of schools. Won an eight-way primary with 40% of the vote, 42%, so won decidedly. And we've got a great candidate for Attorney General in Josh Call. We've had a rather ethically challenged and somewhat incompetent Republican Attorney General. So there's a lot of cool activity happening, and we had great primary turnouts. And the last thing I think I'd say is, just to give you an idea, again, on turnout intensity, in Wisconsin, about $1.25 million was spent cumulatively by all of our gubernatorial candidates, and over $30 million with outside money on the Republican primary for the U.S. Senate. And we had 85,000, last time I looked, more Democratic votes than Republican votes in Wisconsin yesterday in the primary, despite that huge imbalance on spending.
Wow. That is substantial. I'm curious your take on the media mantra. You know, when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was elected, it was like, oh, there's a progressive wave happening. And then when not all of the candidates that she and Bernie endorsed won their primaries, it was the new media narrative seems to be, oh, there's no progressive wave. What's your sense of what's real here?
I think they should go back to their last set of articles. It's a progressive wave. All the races I just mentioned wouldn't have happened had it not been for a progressive wave again. And so we saw that in the upper Midwest, an area that, you know, went more for Trump than other parts of the country 2 years ago. In Wisconsin, there was a poll recently in the last couple weeks. Trump's approval rating was 36%. In Wisconsin, and only 31% want him to run for re-election. So even 5% of the people who think he's doing a good job don't really want him around anymore. So I would still argue that we're seeing this really strong progressive-based turnout coming out, and ultimately, because we're going to have a good November, that means a lot of progressives are going to get elected.
Wonderful. We've got callers on the line literally from coast to coast. We'll pick them up right after the break. It is Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program. Congressman Mark Pocan, the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, representing the great state of Wisconsin, taking your calls for the hour right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You can check out Congressman Pocan's website at pocan.house.gov. His Twitter handle is Rep Mark, M-A-R-K, Pocan, P-O-C-A-N. And welcome back. Jared, in Downington, Pennsylvania, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hello, Tom, and hello, Congressman Pocan. I'm calling today about the recent Saudi bombing of a school bus, killing 51 people, and at least 40 of them were children. I'm asking today, why is it that we have not established a no-fly zone over Saudi Arabia? We've established a no-fly zone over Libya for far less than this.
You mean over Yemen, don't you?
We are seeing. What was that?
You said, why don't we establish one over Saudi Arabia? Don't you mean Yemen?
No. Over Saudi. Oh, yeah. That too. Yeah. Hmm. Over Saudi Arabia, because they're bombing hospitals. They're bombing weddings. They are committing what the UN has called the largest humanitarian catastrophe in the world right now. It's been estimated that more people will starve in Yemen today than people who died during the Holocaust. We're making people mad at us because there are weapons. We are fueling and arming the Saudi bombers who are going out into Yemen, who are dropping these bombs and advising them where to target. My question is, what are we going to do about this? Why has this Holocaust not ended yet?
Jared, great question. You know, I have worked closely with people like Ro Khanna from California, Adam Smith most recently from Washington State, who is the ranking member on one of the committees that relates directly to our nation's defense. Steny Hoyer recently joined us in doing a letter around Yemen. And I think the good news I can offer is, you know, it went from almost no attention to we're actually getting attention. In the Senate, Bernie Sanders was able to get to try to get a vote. Unfortunately, he ran a few votes short. In the House, we are trying to do the same thing to try to force some action. But the good news, at least, is that there is growing attention to what you described very well, an area that hasn't gotten nearly enough attention given the calamity that's happening. The bad news is the Trump administration, I think, if I remember right, the very first country Donald Trump went to when he became president was Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
When most presidents go to Canada, you know, he went where the money is and where his business interests are, and there is a closeness there that we certainly have to fight because we are helping in the refueling of Saudi jets. We are providing other logistical help in what's going on in Yemen, and yet we've often been lied to by folks in the military about this as we've asked questions. So it definitely needs more attention. We're having some progress, but we certainly have to fight against the Trump administration.
We have 28 seconds of the break, Congressman. Do you see this? Let me rephrase that. Are you getting a lot of feedback about this issue from your constituents, or because this is something that is very, very rarely covered by our national news, it's also very rarely brought up by your constituents?
Yes, that's part of the problem is, you know, we are now getting more and more attention. We're starting to get more Twitter traffic, et cetera, on the issue, but part of it is educational. You know, I think if you ask the average person, much less the average member of Congress, where Yemen is, they would probably not get very close on the map to finding it.
Yeah, amen. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls for Congressman Pocan in just a moment. Stick around. It's coming up on 20 minutes past the hour. Congressman Mark Pocan on the line taking your calls for the hour. It's Middays with Mark on the Tom Hartman program. And Dave in Pittsburgh, California, you are on the air with Congressman Mark Pocan.
Yeah, Mark Pocan, I have a question for you. The provisional ballots, who regulates those? And is it a state regulation or a federal regulation, or is it a law passed by the Congress? Who regulates it, and is there a way to petition to remove the provisional ballots completely out of the voting tree and just not ever use the provisional ballot, because we know that they don't get counted? So it's a moot issue when you go to vote if somebody hands you a provisional ballot. Is there any way that a law can be passed, or does the state, or do we have to petition the state to eliminate those provisional ballots? And I'll take your answer on the air. Thank you.
Yeah, Dave, thank you. You know, that is a good question. I wish I could give you this is the definitive answer. I believe it crosses a few different jurisdictions because, you know, often states have a little bit more control over that level. But I believe, if I remember right, there was some direct creation of the provisional ballots following the Bush versus Gore election.
It's in the Help America Vote Act. That's where it started in 2002.
The implementation is done at the state level, but yeah. I could be wrong. There could be a local level jurisdiction. But we just saw, for example, in New Hampshire, they had they were going to toss out votes over some bad signatures. That was ruled unconstitutional. So a lot of that oversight happens at the state level. And I know in my state, you know, we, for example, recently did a photo ID law that matches what a lot of other states have. But fortunately, we still have a same-day registration law that not other states have. So I think it's probably more at your state level and the direct day-to-day supervision of that. But we've got lots of battles when it comes to election law. And the good news is the Democrats have taken the reform as a big issue going into, if we take the majority, things that we're going to move forward around campaign finance and electoral reform will be at the very top of our agenda. And I think in the first 90 days, you'll see bills move.
I think one of the big problems that Dave was identifying is that if you've been purged from the ballots, I mean, we're seeing, for example,
Yeah,
in Florida, Democratic registration is down 2% just in 16 months. And it's, it should be up because there's just this explosion of interest in Democratic candidates all around the country. And in fact, in every other state, it's up. And so if you've been purged from the ballot, you show up at the polls and they give you this thing called a provisional ballot. And 99% of Americans have no idea that that will not be counted unless you show up at the Secretary of State's office or the county election official's office within, and this is where it varies from state to state, you know, 48 hours to 5 days, and present, you know, irrefutable ID that proves that you actually are a U.S. citizen, and then they might count that ballot. So, you know, I think this accounts for the redshift. You know, people walk out of the voting place thinking that they voted, and then they tell the exit pollsters, yeah, I voted for the Democrat,
yeah.
And that's why you get 5 points of redshift, because the Republicans are purging the Democratic voters. How do we inform Americans that if you've been given a provisional ballot, you need to raise holy hell?
Yeah, and you know, and we've talked about this on the show because of listening to folks on the show. We actually introduced a bill to directly go after the cross-check issue and try to make sure that that doesn't happen again. Hopefully that's something that we can, you know, try to look at should the Democrats take Congress, because clearly those purges are done for one reason only, not for any good government, but to purge certain types of voters and make it tougher for them to vote. Specifically on the provisional question, I think we just have to get the word out where that's being used or misused. Like I said, fortunately in some places, but I think we're the exception in Wisconsin where we have same-day registration. So,
right.
You know, people can still be able to vote. But, you know, as you know, other states, unless you do it months in advance, you're not able to actually vote on Election Day.
Oh, yeah. The rolls are closed right now in Florida for this election.
Yeah.
And you know, down 2%, really? Omar in Herndon, Virginia, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Thanks so much, Tom, taking my call and greeting to Mr. Pocan. In light of Chris Collin from New York charges for insider trading, I really don't think that he's not the only one who does this. I think a lot of people in Congress are insider trading. They share information with other people who donate to their campaign. Is Congress going to do anything about insider trading, that these congressmen information that they get? You know, Tom Perez, as you remember, was trading on healthcare companies before he was passing laws on them. Is Congress going to do anything?
Yeah, I think you mean Tom Price,
who got
in the cabinet. Yeah. Right. But you're right, Omar. I mean, first of all, there are ethics rules around it. The problem is it sounds like in some cases there is a little too much latitude. Chris Collins was just an example of someone who really abused the system in a very outward way, right? I mean, he bragged about what he was doing, got a bunch of his colleagues to also invest in the company, but then didn't tell him when the test results didn't come in and he sold his stock. So I bet you he's got a few of his buddies not too happy with him. But bottom line is we do need to make it so that there is no question that, as a member of Congress, I meet with a lot of companies and I know a lot of what they're up to. We have to be very careful and ethical with how you deal with that information. I mean, there's one company in particular in my district, it's doing an amazing job in growing. They've got interaction with the federal government. I will not even invest in anything like that. Anything I'm going to advocate for, it's just a terrible, bad idea to do that. And fortunately, Chris Collins' arrogance allowed him to decide that he could not only invest in, but be on the board of, and then illegally share the information that came out. And again, that's part of why our ethics rules probably would have gone after him, which is why he ditched out so quickly.
Yeah. We just have a minute to the break. Brian Barrett broke this story on this show back, it must have been more than 10 years ago. He walked into, I think it was Tom DeLay's office, and they were doing day trading in the congressman's office based on inside information regarding military contractors. He came on this program. He was horrified. He was the congressman from Washington State, and there was supposed to be some action to make it illegal. I mean, you know, he sponsored legislation. I thought something had passed after he left Congress. What's the status of that?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you offhand from that bill because I'm not sure, you know, from that situation. I wasn't in Congress at the time. I mean, there certainly are ethics rules. We have all sorts of reporting and other requirements. However, it is really loose because half of Congress are millionaires, right? And they treat passive income very different than active income. And, you know, I think we absolutely should be tightening this up so there's not even any doubt that when you're advocating for someone, you're advocating because it's a company in the district, it's the right thing to advocate for, not because you're going to make a personal profit or use that information.
Yeah. Okay. I totally agree. We'll be back with more of Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. It's Middays with Mark. Congressman Pocan is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and it represents the state of Wisconsin. And you can find his website at pocan.house.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
More of your calls for Congressman Pocan in just a moment. It's Middays with Mark on the Tom Hartman Program. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour. Andrew in Cleveland, Ohio, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just wanted to talk for a minute about the need for progressives to put policy over party politics. And I'm just going to highlight three quick examples here and just let him kind of respond to it. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was in L.A. at a DSA rally. Ken Mejia is a progressive Green running in the 34th district in California against a corporately funded Democrat. He gets money from big banks, big insurance companies, the military. And she didn't come out and endorse him or even talk about him or recognize that he was even in the audience.
That's because he's in the Green Party. Come on, Andrew, give me a break. Congressman, you want to respond to that?
I can't speak for Alexandria on that. I think what Andrew, I can say, because I'm not quite sure where you're going with the example, but you know, we are leading with progressive messaging, and right now the Democrats are actually running, and we've been very happy to be a part of getting the Democrats to the message around three things looking at November. One is around health care and the cost of prescription drugs. Two is around good-paying wages and the need to invest in infrastructure. And three, around the corruption in Washington. And, you know, when you're talking raising wages, joining unions, raising the minimum wage, health care access, going after prescription drug companies, and all of the electoral and ethical reforms that need to happen, you've got a lot of progressive issues that Democrats are talking about. So I'm not sure if that's exactly where you're going, Andrew, but I can tell you from where, you know, we are as a caucus in Congress, we've been happy to see, based on some polling we did, and polling the Democrats have, that we've got some issues, I think, that are going to resonate well with people that definitely come from a progressive perspective.
Yeah, it sounded to me like his point was that, well, he said you should put policy over politics. In other words, if you've got a Green running, who's more progressive than a Democrat, then everybody should go to the Green, which is just, I just reject that. I'm sorry. Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell, what's up?
Yeah, Mr. Pocan, nice to talk to you. Now that you've got your governor's race set, are you guys all going to coordinate in the state, or are all you guys going to be on your own? Because it was like a month ago, and Joey Reid already had your guy up 55-41 over Scott Walker, even before you had a primary. And I was wondering, if he wins, can he do away with these ID laws? And let's be honest, the next big thing is right to work. Can he put that on the ballot to have it overturned? I'll take your answer offline.
Yeah, good questions, Russell. I mean, so first of all, there was one poll, a Marinus NBC poll, that had Tony Evers up 13 points over Scott Walker. I've seen a couple others that are a little tighter, but still with him up. I mean, this is a real race in Wisconsin, and we have a real chance, based on a number of things. We have the second or fourth worst roads in the country because Scott Walker doesn't invest in infrastructure. We have school cuts, and Tony Evers was the state superintendent of schools, so he can talk about those issues like nothing else. And then the $4.5 billion to a foreign corporation, Foxconn, that is really seen as a boondoggle. There's plenty of issues on Scott Walker. So I think if we get a Democrat governor, we will work together, Tammy Baldwin and Tony Evers, as well as our candidates for attorney general and legislative and other state offices. We're energized. Everyone is in a very cooperative mode. There were not negative attacks during the campaign, so our candidates came out strong in the state races. And then we've got some exciting congressional races. So, I think if we get Tony Evers in, we have to see what happens with the legislative majorities, how far he can go. We don't have binding referendums. We do have advisory referendums in Wisconsin, but Scott Walker did bring us right to work, and he brought us the changes to collective bargaining rights, and he's trying to mess around with prevailing wage law and a lot of things that hurt working Americans. So Tony will be a great contrast to what Scott Walker's incompetence has been.
Rick in Seattle, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air, Rick.
Hi, I'm just a cranky old man. I've heard for years and a lot around the current situation how this country is a nation of laws. And my question really involves that. I wonder what happens to what is anybody in the Justice Department doing about some of these accusations about and possible indictments of people like this guy, Scott, whatever his name is, who was part of the EPA, about investigations that were going on into things that he was doing. Is anybody following up on that? Or when these people resign, does everything drop out of the out of investigation?
Yeah, great questions, Rick. I mean, part of the problem we have right now is the Department of Justice is been essentially under siege by even the White House. How many times has he tweeted attacks on Jeff Sessions, trying to get him to leave so he can put someone who's more of a tool in place than even Jeff Sessions has been in order to try to get rid of the Mueller investigation. So, they're not going to be taking, I think, any real efforts to go after the many, many scandals of people like Scott Pruitt and others. I don't anticipate that this Department of Justice will. Now, if you have a Democrat control in the House or the Senate, I think you could definitely see hearings convened and pressure put on to make sure, because what you bring up, Rick, is really valid. So often we like to hear from the Republicans that it's a nation of laws, and yet their people who are involved in government are some of the biggest violators, and yet then they raise, all these other little dog whistles that come around to race when it comes to law. If we take the majority, I think there's a much greater chance that we can try to get some action, but right now Department of Justice is a bit of a mess, given that Donald Trump is actually in battle with them himself.
Lisa in Las Vegas. Hey, Lisa, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good morning, Congressman. My horror starts with Devin Nunes, and nothing's stopping this guy and his admission in that tape, that he's there to protect the president instead of what Congress's job is to be a check and the executive branch. It's just all a mess, and there's so many other topics, but that's one of the ones bothering me. Thank you.
Sure, Lisa, that's a good topic to bother you. I mean, Devin Nunes has been an abysmal representative in Congress. The Intelligence Committee has traditionally operated in a more bipartisan way, a little bit above politics. They've tried to keep it that way. Devin Nunes, as the chair, has done just the opposite. He's been the leader of the Shriners circus in Congress, doing crazy things, trying to defend the president rather than, as you said, be a co-equal branch of government and stand up and do the checks and balances that are needed. So I'm hoping that the voters in that district, even though it's a leaning Republican district, they have a great alternative, and hopefully they'll look at statements like he just said, where he thinks his job is to defend the president rather than the country, and they'll decide that even if they're Republican-leaning, there's just too much corruption going on, and Devin Nunes is too much in front of all of that, and they need to replace him.
The Fresno Bee, by the way, is reporting Devin Nunes' news here. He was publicly called out for misusing 9/11. There was a group of constituents who held a rally for Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security across the street from his office, and he dialed 911 and tried to get the police to break it up, apparently, or protect him from these evil people.
Yeah, he's a classic example of people who've been in Washington too long and they think they're above the law.
Yeah.
And, you know, to take even a committee like that that's been traditionally well-respected by both parties and do what he's done to it, that alone should be grounds to make him find a new career.
Paul in Minneapolis, let's see, on KTNF. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, my name is Paul, and I had a question about the influence of voting machines. It was mentioned earlier that there are still a lot of machines that could actually have faulty or systemic things that could favor whoever favorable to the machines. How does that impact our future? And I have some questions too, or info about Minnesota elections other than that in 5th District. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, Paul, I think you raise an issue that I have been pretty passionate about in Congress, which is, if you're going to have a democracy, everyone has to have equal access to it, and you can't have it risked by something like a voting machine that's either hacked into by another country or a company. We need to have things like paper ballots, which luckily the Democrats are unified behind. We need to do that to make sure we've got accountability. I would love to see random audits of elections as well. I would love to see our elections part of our national critical infrastructure definition, like our financial systems and our energy grids are, to provide the utmost security so someone can't abuse those systems. But there is much that we need to do, and fortunately this is part of the Democrats' proposals to end corruption that I think you'll see move forward in the first 90 days should the House change to Democratic hands.
Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour. He's the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He represents the state of Wisconsin. His website is pocan.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. R-E-P, Mark, M-A-R-K, Pocan, P-O-C-A-N, Rep. Mark Pocan. And we'll be back with more of your calls for Congressman Pocan in just a moment. It is 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Middays with Mark on the Tom Hartman Program. Back with more of your calls for Congressman Pocan right after this. And welcome back. Jim in Sacramento, you're on. Oops, hang on just a second, Jim. It helps if I put you on the air. Jim, watching us on Free Speech TV in Sacramento, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman. My question is a simple one. It's semantics, I think. But the Republicans seem to turn their current tax system as a permanent tax cut. And I assume that means for 10 years. But is that really true when you have a new Congress? Aren't they free to change that tax system?
Yes. So under the plan that they passed, would in 10 years, 83% of the money would go to the top 1%. They're talking about in September trying to have us make the other tax cuts for the middle class permanent, which are, again, are very, very, very small compared to the corporate tax cuts and the tax cuts that were given to the wealthiest. But any Congress could come in and change that policy. And I think, we have lots of ideas when it comes to that from the Progressive Caucus, how, we should make sure that we have as progressive a tax system as possible and that we're looking at some sources that make sense, things like a financial transaction fee for high-speed financial transactions, much like the European Union. That alone would bring in $1 trillion a year. So there's a lot of ways we could change the tax code. It's just under their current plan, it shows where their priorities are, and their priorities are in 10 years, 83% of the money goes to the top 1%, and that's why their plan is failing so miserably.
Terry in Sydney, Montana, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, Congressman. I have a question why we're not hearing more about the replacement rate on farms and that. Our equipment is mostly on a 40-year replacement time frame, and this climate change is hitting at us a lot faster than 40 years. But we hear nothing about that. Even if you were to make the switch, how long are you anticipating the public, the businesses responding?
Yeah, Jerry, so I think you make one of a number of good arguments that we make when it comes to climate change. The problem is there is serious climate change denial in Congress. There's a lack of acceptance of science and facts in Congress, and I think some of it's out of ignorance, and I think a bigger part of it is out of special interest. They're not going to go against the oil and gas industry. They're not going to go against some of the powerful industries that fund the campaigns for the current Republican majority. So we need to make sure we take these to the public, because I think, again, like you said, farmers and Republican-leaning parts of the country need to understand that a lack of addressing climate change on behalf of those special interests is impacting their ability to have that small family farm and be able to have an economic security for their family. So I think it's a good point, and we have lots to do to get forward on that issue.
Is a piece of this depreciation schedules on farm equipment?
Well, I think what it's the financing of equipment and the terms they're having, and if you actually have legitimate climate change, some of the things that you may be growing in areas may not still grow in that area if climate change continues at the rate it's at. And, farming is a tough, tough business. I have so many farms in the district, and, they're always struggling. And right now, especially to have a family farm, not to be a big CAFO, a big corporate farm, there's just a lot of work, a lot of expense. And when you have the tariff issues and everything else, it's tough for people to make a go.
Yeah, amen. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls for the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls for Congressman Pocan in just a moment. Stick around. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls. It's the Tom Hartman Program. And Greg in Columbus, Ohio, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good, Greg.
I was calling to see. Yeah, I was calling. This is Greg from Ohio. Yeah, I was calling to find out if there's a way that we can do something with the tax code to incentivize businesses to give higher wages to their employees by lowering their taxes. Is there something in the tax code that we can do for that?
Greg, you could. I mean, with tax code, there's a lot of flexibility you could do. I would argue, I think one of a couple of the things that would really raise wages and help in a very substantive way. One is let's raise the minimum wage. And while I think something like 90% of the people are making above that now in most businesses, there's still the outliers that do not pay above that. And, at $15,000 a year, you're not even close to what it actually takes to get by. Second, let's make it easier for people to form unions, have a voice in their workplaces, because as we know, people who work in union jobs are paid substantially more than people without union jobs. And there's a whole lot of other things that we could also do, and I think those are things that as Democrats we've talked about. I don't know if it's necessarily something you have to do via tax code, because businesses are making money right now. It'd be great if it was shared with the people who actually work there as opposed to just the shareholders or the folks on the very top. All too often we've seen, especially with this new tax bill that just happened, that's where all the money went instead of to the people actually working. So I think there's other ways we could probably incentivize, but we should be doing that.
Linda in Coconut Creek, Florida, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Thank you, Congressman, for taking my call. We just love you and Tom.
Thank you.
But down here in Florida, Tom had said yesterday about how they're throwing Democrats off the voter registration rolls. And in the paper yesterday, Rick Scott refuses to acknowledge it. When a 16-year-old kid broke into it, he hacked into it and said it can be done. And he proved it to everybody. And our governor here refuses to acknowledge it. And I'm just wondering, because he's chasing Bill Nelson, are we looking at
they're going to rig it anyway, and there's no hope in Florida. I mean, is there anybody up there keeping an eye on this stuff? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, no, I think there are plenty of folks who are very tuned in, especially Florida of all places, right? Where, you know, hanging chads, you know, are something now that's in the vernacular. People understand what's happening. I'm actually heading tonight to Florida. I'm helping a couple candidates over the next couple days, and I'm going to try to find a little more about what's going on, and I'm going to be bringing that back next week because we know the situation with the provisional ballots, as mentioned, but I just want to see how deep it is because, as you know, with that governor running, that is a competitive Senate race, and because of that, there's going to be lots and lots of attention, but I think that also means attention on the voting systems, and we'll be looking for any ways that they're trying to work it. So I look forward to next week. Hopefully I can talk a little more personally and directly about that issue.
Robert in Chicago, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan. Robert?
Yes, I am. This is Robert, yeah.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay. Yesterday, I wanted to call yesterday, but I didn't have a chance. I was too much in the busy. You had a gentleman, and I believe he was a congressman or senator, I'm not sure which. He was talking about universal health care and a bill that they were putting forth, Medicaid for All. Do you remember that?
Medicare for All, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Medicaid, right?
Medicare. Oh, no, what I was talking about yesterday was that the Congressional Budget Office has found that if you have a choice between giving people Obamacare or giving people Medicaid, it's about 30% less expensive to the government to give them Medicaid than Obamacare, because Obamacare involves private for-profit insurance companies.
Right. So it was Medicare.
So what's your question for the congressman?
Yeah.
No question for the congressman. Okay. Pastor John in New Haven, Connecticut, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Thank you both for taking my call.
Real quick, John, we just have a minute and a half before the end of the hour.
Congressman, can we do this to get all the Justice Democrats, corporate Democrats to get together to have unity campaigns? That's number one. If you could work on that, get everybody together, vote blue no matter who. And then the second thing is, there's a guy named John Roberts Brakey, D-R-A-K-E-Y, he's on Facebook.
We're just going to stick with the first question there, Congressman.
Yeah, Tom, and I couldn't quite make it out. Did you? Can you?
I couldn't make it out either. It was. Yeah, I think he was on a speakerphone. It was hard to understand. So, Congressman, we just have a minute to the end of the hour. Your thoughts on the upcoming week? What we should be paying attention to and doing?
Well, again, this is the August in-district period for members of the House. The Senate, I think, are still playing a little bit because Mitch McConnell's keeping Democrats from being in their districts. But I assume they'll also be home. This is a great time to get a hold of your member of Congress in a face-to-face meeting while they're out and about in the public and to be heard on issues. And I would recommend people take advantage of that because too many people don't do town halls anymore because they're afraid of their constituents. That's not fair. That's part of our job. So take advantage of this time period to get direct FaceTime with your member of Congress and be heard.
And in anticipation of periods like this in the future, book a hall and invite your member of Congress, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there is no excuse for this trend we've seen of people not doing town halls. That's why I went, you know, and did five of them in Paul Ryan's district, and now he's not running. You know, he needs to do so much more. That's our job, to listen to your constituents and make sure your members doing that.
There you go. Congressman Pocan, thanks so much for being with us every week. I really appreciate it.
Oh, of course, Tom. Thank you.
And today. Thank you so much. We'll be back. Greg Palast is going to be dropping by right after the break, and Mark Castle will be with us at the third hour of the program. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.